welcome to the Ted and Austin Brower Show with your host, Ted and Austin Brower, bringing you the latest in world news and health info. This is Austin Brower, and I'm so glad to be with you guys today, up and running strong. How are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing absolutely wonderful. I want to start off the show with a new article I just pulled up on turmeric. I'm incredible. And it says that turmeric's heart-saving properties confirmed in new diabetes study. A remarkable new study published in the New Journal of the American of Nutritional Biochemistry reveals the immense value of the ancient spice turmeric in the treatment of type 2 diabetes and the reversal of pathological states linked to its most deadly complication, atherosclerotic heart disease. The new title says reduction of the androgenic risk of patients with type 2 diabetes by turmeric, a random controlled trial. And it said, number one, it prevented the formation of the type 2 on diabetes, 100% effective, by the way, in pre-diabetics over the course of a six-month interval with the turmeric. And the new study research is also from Thailand, conducted a six-month randomized double-blind placebo-controlled clinical trial composed of 226 subjects diagnosed with type 2 diabetes during a mean duration of the disease 6 years, and they found that it stopped heart disease, it lowered markers of inflammation, it lowered insulin resistance, it lowered triglycerides level, it lowered uric acid levels, it lowered abdominal obesity, it helped the pulse wave velocity measure of the arterial stiffness, which is a strong correlation of cardiovascular events and all-cause mortality. You know, guys, the more I read about this stuff, this is why I take it every single day. In fact, I told Austin yesterday, I said, I think you need to take about 15 of those a day. You guys say, 15 a day? It's not going to hurt you. You know, I tell you what, guys, it's a phenomenal, phenomenal product. Isn't this the same thing, Austin, that we used, that Lana used to get rid of her allergies?
Yes, it's a multi-tiered product as far as it's good for so much different stuff. Every time you find out something about it, you find out how great it is, and that's why I'm running 16 a day of them right now. Like I said, that's my protocol. I'm not telling you to run that. But as far as my overall recovery and everything, it definitely seems to be pretty effective for what's going on. Lana was running 18 of them a day for her allergies. Her allergies were absolutely horrific when we first got married, and completely knocked out her allergies to the point where this year she didn't even have to take hardly any of them. I think she was taking two or three of them a day this allergy season in Florida and didn't have a single issue with allergies. So, I mean, the anti-inflammatory properties of turmeric, that's why we used to carry it in 60 capsules. We start finding out that so many people were taking it, and it's crazy because it's one product that I've actually seen that the more you take of it, the better results you get. Where a lot of products, you know, there's kind of a cap on it after 3, 4, 5 capsules, you know, 2 or 3,000 milligrams. It reaches a point where it doesn't really do much more after that. With turmeric, there doesn't seem to be a limit on it. There's no ceiling on how good it can affect your body. So, yeah, that's my protocol right now, and it seems to be doing fairly well. I won't take that forever, but I'll probably stay on that dosage for the next couple weeks until I start recovering even further and then taper on my way down. It's a great, great product.
Well, you know, what's also interesting about that product is that we found that it really, really works well if you, like, have itching problems, like with skin allergies. Because when I had tomatoes, I could take the turmeric when I didn't know that I had a tomato allergy, and it would stop the itching almost within minutes. Only product I've ever found that would do that. And of course, now I just take it on an ongoing basis, but I still don't eat tomatoes. But besides, they're a nice shade variety of vegetable anyhow, where some people say they're fruit. And what they end up doing, basically, they cause a lot of inflammation in the body. So they're not a real good food to eat a lot of. That includes potatoes, eggplant, bell pepper, and tomatoes, and ketchup. They really are inflammatory marker. They actually cause a lot of inflammation and rheumatoid arthritis. So make sure that you stay away from the nice shade variety of vegetables. And also, turmeric has been shown now in some research. It seems to indicate that when you take large amounts of turmeric, it's like throwing a wet blanket on cancer cells as far as, like, you know, in your body, as far as stopping them like a fire. So this got some really promising stuff, and it's literally good for hundreds of different things like black seed oil. So black seed oil and turmeric are super important for maintaining the immune system. Here's another article. It says that if you take sufficient zinc every day, it helps to eliminate and alleviate pneumonia in the elderly. Now, that's something I didn't know that it did that, but it's really good for the immune system with these elderly patients. It says dietary zinc is widely used in an essential trace mineral that's commonly found in a wide range of foods. And the biggest problem is when you don't have enough zinc, you have more tendency to get colds and flu and also pneumonia. The inability to stockpile this mineral in your body, along with poor absorption rates because it's a heavy metal, It's really heavy for your body to absorb. And an increased knee may explain why the elderly seem to be prone to be zinc deficient, because they don't have a sufficient amount of hydrochloric acid in their stomach to get it to go into their bloodstream and to digest properly. According to the findings of a study conducted by the United States Department of Agriculture, elderly people with abnormally low zinc levels in their blood may be more susceptible to acquiring pneumonia than their peers. Now, I thought it was a very good study. Now, also, what zinc does, too, it really helps sperm count and sperm motility. In other words, it makes your sperm a lot more active, and it makes it a lot higher as far as concentrations. You combine that with vitamin E and combine that with HGH stimulate, it works like a natural Viagra in men. So the truth is, if you have a low sperm count and you can't get your wife pregnant, which is like 50% of the time now, it's the guy's problem because of all these hormones and these endocrine disrupting hormones that are being put into the food supply, massively increase your E, but make sure it's a natural vitamin E and not a synthetic. That's real important because synthetics are toxic. We have only the natural vitamin E at Health Masters, and make sure you take zinc. I take 4 zinc a day and 4 vitamin E, 1600 IUs a day. I think it's about 100 milligrams of zinc every day. Because remember, just because you take 100 milligrams doesn't mean you're going to absorb 100 milligrams. That's always a misnomer with supplements. You think you take them all, you're going to absorb it all. Not necessarily true. But make sure the zinc is not in a tablet that's been basically coated with calcium carbonate and contains calcium carbonate as a binder, because it's like cement. Makes it literally impossible to digest because your body can't break it down. Makes it even more difficult to get any of from the zinc into your body. Plus, it builds up in your arteries with the calcium carbonate. So always make sure you use zinc and E if you have lower sperm counts or if you have a lowered libido. And in many cases, that'll work by itself without having to take the HGH stimulate, which actually releases nitric oxide into the system, which works like a natural Viagra. So that's a great product. It's called HGH stimulate. What's your next story, Oz?
Well, this is interesting because I've, as all of the controversy we hear about gun control and stuff, I kind of wanted to bring this little tidbit of information up to make people understand that a lot of times it's not the law-abiding citizens to even remotely contribute to illegal guns on the street. This is an article that came out yesterday from Mercury News. They said in California, and since 2010, so in the last 6 years, at least 944 guns have disappeared from police in the Bay Area and state and federal agents across California, an average of almost one gun every other day, and a less than 20% of those weapons have even been recovered. Far more guns, they said, are all listed as lost, missing, or unaccounted for other than stolen. They use that listing when they suspect but aren't sure where the weapon might be. This is great right here. Stockton police have listed 2 Colt M16 machine guns as lost, although Lieutenant Rodney Redgo says they were probably stolen when a police building was burglarized. The department also has listed 15 12-gauge Remington shotguns and 2 more additional Bushmaster AR-15 semi-automatic rifles as unaccounted for as well. Only 2 of the shotguns were ever found after 2014. San Jose lost track of 324 guns, where it shows that the officers either took their weapons when they retired or the weapons completely disappeared from the police control. The city recovered a whopping 14 of the missing guns, records show. And it just goes on in here and talks about all these different guns that these guys lose on a regular basis. And what nobody realizes is all these guns are either federally owned or police-owned weapons. And so when they're listing them as lost or they're listing them as missing because these cops don't want to take accountability for them actually being stolen, the weapons will not be recovered as a stolen weapon. If it goes into a database, as far as the FBI database, it's not going to come up as a stolen gun in the event that the serial numbers run. It's going to show as a lost or missing weapon, which means the individual that probably stole it won't even be charged with theft or possession of a stolen weapon. It'll be lost because these guys don't want to take accountability for losing these weapons. So I just thought I would just kind of address that today and make people understand that a lot of these guns that a lot of these criminals are getting are not from law-abiding citizens. They're a lot of times being stolen from very, very, very sloppy police departments that don't even bother to keep their weapons in check, their guns in check in their vehicles, and their weapons in check at their house. So, yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring that to light today so a lot of people understand where these illegal guns come from in a lot of cases.
Well, also, Austin, you have to look at it this way. A lot of these guns are from evidence lockers. In other words,
yeah.
A case will go to court, a gun was seized. It's a pre-banned semi-automatic machine gun that's perfectly legal to own, and it's worth $30,000 or $40,000. And the guy in the evidence locker sees it. The case goes cold after a couple of years. It's just sitting there. Nobody ever checks the inventory, and all of a sudden it just goes away one night. And all of a sudden nobody even bothers to find out whatever happened to it. They go back 10 years later. Oh, I think that's gone now. Where did that go? We don't know. It's lost.
Yeah.
And we were talking this morning while Austin was having breakfast here at the house about if the SWAT team actually went in to the Orlando nightclub and did most of the shootings, the ballistics matches on the barrels of the rifles will show that. In other words, they're going to pick up all the shell casings, look for fingerprints of these guys, if they're telling the truth, unless they loaded them with gloves. A lot of these guys are smart now. They load all of their weapons with gloves so there's no fingerprints on any of the shell casings. Secondly, if they did shoot people in that club and that gun was checked to them, all they have to do is change out the upper or the barrel of the M16 and put a new barrel on it and just discard the old barrel, because remember, the bottom of the M16 is the fully automatic part. That's the one that's registered. The uppers are fully interchangeable. So if they put a new upper on it, then the ballistics would not match the bullet, and it would be another big mystery. And they could say there was another shooter who shot this guy. He must have gotten away, and that's the gun that was used on shooting the bulk of the people. What do you think, Oz?
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right about that. There's a whole weird, weird thing that's going on with that shooting. We went into it detail yesterday if you guys want to listen to some of it. But from what we're hearing, anywhere from the SWAT team ended up shooting the people when they came in to, you know, there was multiple shooters that came in to shot this guy, that they don't even know who shot the people. I mean, all these weird stories, gag orders on all those officers, you know, everybody, EMT fire. Even the officers that we spoke to yesterday that were at the club, you know, providing, you know, perimeter security, wouldn't really speak to us about anything. And that's the same thing that me and Dad talked about earlier today. If these SWAT members were involved in it, you know, the lieutenants are basically, if they knew this happened, all they have to do is say, okay, we need to turn in your weapons for evidence. When they turn in the weapons for evidence, they pop two pins, pull the uppers, replace it with a new one, and the weapon's still exactly the same as it was before, because, again, as you just said, the serial number and the firing mechanism is all based on the lower of the rifle that's registered. The upper is completely meaningless. It can be swapped out at any given time. Those things disappear. The new ones go on. Then, like Dad said, it's a mystery. We have no idea. The SWAT officers didn't shoot the individuals. The robber or the hijacker or the, you know, the person, Mateen, whatever his name is, didn't shoot the individuals. We don't know how it happened. All these guys just got shot by some mystery gun that was in there. So I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't think we're ever going to get the true story on what happened over there. But I told Dad this morning, I said it was a very, very weird vibe going over there and walking around the place yesterday and still seeing the hazmat team going in and out of the building and everything else. It's just very, very strange. So whatever happened over there was a tragedy, but overall, it's a very, very weird situation, especially being there yesterday. So I don't know. We're all obviously going to keep an eye out on it and see what happens, but it's pretty odd.
Well, also remember, the gays are not even allowed to give blood in most cases because they have a lot of diseases from their lifestyle, and so they're not allowed to even be blood donors. And so a lot of them in that club may have already had AIDS or other types of sexually transmitted diseases that were active in the blood. And quite frankly, that blood could have been super, super contaminated with who knows what. And that's probably one of the reasons that the cops that were there, when we asked them if they had not gone in, said they had no reason to go in there.
That's true. I didn't think about that as well.
Yeah, they don't want the AIDS stuff on their shoes, on their boots. They don't want any of that stuff. They don't want to have to be hosed off or go through hazmat or put on a full hazmat suit. So, you know, I mean, but think about that, guys. I mean, that's why, again, most of the gays are not allowed to be blood donors because of the diseases they carry. I mean, when you're sodomizing other men, which is really what they do, what ends up happening is that's not natural for the human body, and you have all kinds of immune system problems with that, and it's just a sick, perverted lifestyle is what it is. I mean, if it was okay to do that, you know, God would have not made a, you know, man Adam and Eve, you know, would have been that way. And it's an aberration is what it is. Now they can say that it's normal if they want to say that, or they're sexually, you know, they were brought, they're that way because of genetics or whatever they want to say. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference. It's still an abnormal lifestyle for mammals, because if everybody on the whole planet decided to turn gay one generation, the life on this planet would cease immediately because there'd be no babies. Now what's also interesting about that is the big promotion of the gay lifestyle has been something that these globalists, these Rothschild boys have been doing, oh gosh, 50, 60, 70, 80 years now. And the reason they promote that lifestyle, again, it brings down the population of the planet, and it further weakens the Christian values that founded this country. You know, it was the Christian Protestant work ethic. I'm going to say that again. You guys are going to hear me say that a lot. That built the United States of America. Now, that's just the way it is. Now, that's who the people were. They were the Christians and the Protestants, a lot of Lutherans, especially after the Civil War, when the population had been so wiped out. And so it's been an interesting thing watching the history be rewritten, even as I've been alive. It's kind of sad, actually. Now, here's another article. This is interesting. It's apparently the mainstream media finally admits that 72 mass banker suicides were likely a vast criminal conspiracy to silence the bankers. Finally, okay?
Finally.
There's no question that this story, that they won't just die, even after 72 bankers, it's in the path had to die before the story could get out to this point. Hopefully no one will die before the wizard behind the curtain, the Rothschilds, is finally revealed and brought to justice for his or her crimes. Now, guys, let me stop here for this Rothschild thing for just a second. You got the Pope that's equally involved in this mess. You got the Queen of England and the royal family. You got the Bilderberger Group. You got the Council of 300. You've got the Masonic lodges at the higher levels. All of these people, you got the Bohemian Club. You got all of these different people that are working together under the cloak of Luciferism, Satanism, to bring about the changes that they're bringing into the world. See, it's not just about the Rothschilds. Now, mind you, these are the guys who started this with Sabatine Levy and Jacob Frank of the Rothschilds and all that kind of stuff back in the 1600s, 1700s. We got that. But this is much bigger now. This thing has spread across to Skull and Bones at Yale. It's in the top leaders in the country are Skull and Bones. I mean, think about this. Theodore Roosevelt was Skull and Bones. I mean, all of these different things, and Taft, I believe, was Skull and Bones. And, I mean, all of these, I mean, Roosevelt made it, I think it was Taft. But the whole thing about this is that we got this big mess of these secret societies that are out there right now that are waiting for globalism. Because it's the globalists who allow the corporations to come in and run the countries and lose the sovereignty and open the borders of the country. We talked about this yesterday. And it allows these people at the top to become insanely wealthy, but it completely eliminates the middle class. So you have the serfs and the rulers, and it takes us back into a feudal system. That's the goal. So yes, the Rothschilds are at the head of this thing, but they're not the only suspects in the middle of this mess, because the Rothschilds control the money. But remember, if the money supply stops, like through the Vatican Bank or through the Rothschilds, suddenly everything comes to a screeching halt. How do you think they're paying these hundreds of billions of dollars a year to spray the crap out of us with chemtrails? That's expensive. It's expensive for jet fuel additive. It's expensive to run those military planes like this, sometimes nonstop, crisscrossing the skies. That's expensive. I mean, you're looking at thousands and thousands of dollars an hour just in jet fuel for these big planes to stay airborne. Not to mention the cost of the pilots, the maintenance on the airplanes and everything else. So you're looking at hundreds of billions of dollars are being spent globally to spray this whole planet with this cocoon of Morgellons, aluminum, you know, biologicals, you know, barium, you know, strontium. I mean, all of this poison is being pumped into us. I was at lunch just a moment ago with a college faculty member here in town. And we had lunch and we were talking, and my wife was there, my daughter was there, and he's got a really nagging, hacking cough, same thing Dave Hodges had. It's getting worse and worse and worse. He was pale. He looked very sick. His energy levels were way down. My college professor, the guy I was with today, not my college professor, I'm not going to school right now. And what ended up happening is he ended up being at lunch just coughing and hacking the whole time. And I said, dude, you got a chemtrail cough. And he goes, you gotta be kidding me. I said, no, man, because he knows what chemtrails are. Of course, he's my friend, he would know what chemtrails are. And he goes, man, he says, I can't get rid of this thing, man. It's awful. He says, my wife told me how pale I look. Everybody told me how bad I look. And I said, well, yeah, your immune system, you're growing Morgellons in your lungs. Sometimes it's a fungus combined with a plant combined with an insect. It's a cross-domain species parasite. And he starts asking me all these questions about it. So I explained it all to him. He goes, gosh, I don't want to know all that. I said, I told you to start with, you didn't want to know it all. I said, but you've got to get this stuff out of your lungs. So I told him, black seed oil, potassium iodide, D3, vitamin C, multiple. I said, those are the things you've got to take. Turmeric, you've got to take those things right now, immediately to get your system back on boot. And I tell you what, guys, Sharon had the same mess when we came home from Europe, and I had that crazy thing that was messed up my nose that took 2 months to heal. This stuff with our immune systems is getting worse and worse and worse. I praise God. I pray Yahweh. I thank Yeshua every single day that He's given me the knowledge that I have, Austin, and our listeners. And guys, please listen to me. I mean this in the most humble way, that I've experienced so much of this stuff in the clinic when I've worked with thousands of patients, and they can call us up and I can say, hey, yeah, this protocol works really well. This support system works really well. This is the healthy immune system support. You know, go online, order that. It'll help you get rid of this nagging chemtrail cough. And so the man I spoke to today said he's going to order it today from us. So but the whole thing is, guys, you know, you've got to take care of your body right now. You've got to stay away from stress. You've got to cut back on caffeine. If you're going to use caffeine, do what I do. Use the purple sticks. Take one a day. I try not to do that more than one a day. And it doesn't mess up your sleep pattern that way. One in the morning when you get up, it's got all the B vitamins in it. It's got the green tea. There's no coffee in it. It gives you a real good kick in the morning. And it makes you feel really good to start with in the morning as you know, try to wake up. I use that before I work out, before I train. Phenomenal product. We've got them in stock. They're going quick. We don't have that many left. So if you guys want to get them, now's the time. So I just wanted to share all that with you guys right now, let you know that, hey, we're here. We're here to help you. And if you ever need me, and you guys know this, you've done it, go to our website. How do they calculate? How do they get to us on the website, Austin? How do they find the email address on the website?
Oh, the easiest way is to type in contact, the word contact, C-O-N-T-A-C-T, in the search bar at the top. And under the search results is the very first item that comes up at the top of the search results. It says contact Health Masters. And you put in your name, your email address, everything on there, and you push send, and it goes directly to us. And now, that being said, guys, please understand that we get hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails a week from you guys, and we do our very best to answer as much as we can. But if you are going to contact us, please make sure it's about something that you really can't find on the website, you really can't figure out with all the articles we have. You can't find it in any type of protocol, because we've put on literally thousands of hours in that website, writing articles, putting kits together, all kinds of stuff, so you guys can find it right there as soon as you need it on the website. Type in any word you want into the search bar, and it'll pretty much come up in the search engine. So we provided that for you. But, yes, if you do need something specific, if you're trying to find an answer for something, feel free to contact us. But please do us a favor and make sure that it's not something like, oh, I need to know what are the ingredients in the ultimate multiple. And I've gotten that email actually more than once, believe it or not. I need to know how many capsules are in the bottle. And, you know, if you click ultimate multiple, the first thing it says is 120 capsules, dosage, ingredients, everything from top to bottom. So everything like that, basic information, is on the website along with hundreds of articles. But if there's something that you can't find and you really need to know, please feel free to email us, and we're more than happy to answer the best we can as quickly as we can.
Well, and also, too, do us a favor. Don't ask us to do third-party consults. If your uncle's, cousin's, neighbor's, brother's, son's, relative, sister, cousin has a problem with something, don't email us for her, okay? Tell her to email us herself. Let her listen to the show. Because what happens is, I can tell you this, 99% of the time, probably 99.99% of the time, when we answer those emails, the person never ever gets on our protocol. And the few times that they actually get on the protocol, and we've had this happen, they go to Walmart and they think they're buying the same stuff, and they're not. They get on the protocol, they use it for 30 days, they get absolutely zero results because they're chemical Chinese vitamins, and then they call us up, pitching a fit. We've actually had them buy their stuff from other places and demand a refund from us. I mean, this is, I know you guys think we're kidding, but we're not. So please don't do that. I mean, if the person wants us to help them, you know, tell them to listen to one of my tapes or one of my CDs or one of my YouTube shows or whatever and say, hey, these guys are willing to help you if you're interested. And that's it. Let it go.
Tell them to call us.
We'll be happy to help them. But please don't ask us to do third party consults. Now, if your husband or your wife asks you to call us or contact us for them, okay, I'm good with that. Okay, I'm okay with that. If they're busy, if they got a job or whatever, if they want you to do it for them, okay. But not somebody you're going to contact who has not asked you to do that because you're trying to help them. It really doesn't work that way. And quite frankly, it's going to be a waste of your time too. And so just there's other things to do and other people who you can help a whole lot more. What's your next story, Oz?
This one's interesting. I wanted to address this today too because last year we saw this info and this was starting to happen all across the board with the vaccine. Now we got the first real, true totalitarian police state refusal to vaccine document for signature by the parents. And this is something I got it from Piper McGowan. This is crazy now. This is actually, they have a list on it right here, an actual a shot of it, a photo of it, of the new refusal to vaccine form that a lot of states and a lot of pediatricians are carrying. I'm going to go over it for a second. I want to give you guys some tips on this, on what to do, what not to do, and understand what you're doing. If this comes up with your pediatrician, you need to make sure you completely understand what you're reading and what you're signing, which you shouldn't be signing it. First off, it says on there it has the child's name and it has the child's ID number. That's the first thing that should flag you right there whenever they're giving your child an ID number. It's not their social. It's not any type of information for school. This is the child's ID number. This is a vaccine identification number that they're giving to your child. That right there should be a giant red flag. This should not be issued to your child. Secondly, it has the parent's guardian name. Here's what it says on here. My child's doctor and nurse, blank, which is for their name, they fill out, has advised me that my child, named above, should receive the following vaccine. And it just has a plethora, all the vaccines they recommend, with a big box to the each right side of them that says decline, so they can check each one that you're declining. Here's what it says on the right. This is all documented in bold. There are some vaccines that are preventable diseases are common in other countries, and that my unvaccinated child could easily get one of these vaccines or these diseases while traveling or from a traveler. Secondly, if my child does not receive the vaccines according to the medically accepted schedule, the consequences may include contracting the illness the vaccine is designed to prevent, certain types of cancer, pneumonia, illness requiring hospitalization, death, brain damage, paralysis, seizure, deafness, severe and permanent effects from these vaccine-preventable diseases, transmitting the disease to others. My child's doctor and the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention all strongly recommend these vaccines be given immediately. Nevertheless, I have decided at this time to decline or defer. I know that failure to follow the recommendations about this vaccination may endanger the health or life of my child and others with whom my child might come in contact with. Signed at the bottom. Signature. Your name. Guys, listen to me. If you come in contact with your pediatrician and they even pull out one of these sheets of paper, the last thing you need to do is sign this piece of paper. This is a complete and total evidence sheet. This is going to be one of the only things they will ever need in court to take away your child from you permanently. You are basically signing a child abuse confession statement. Now, you can go online and you can read this if you want. It's all over online right now. But you need to understand, this is something you never need to put your name or your signature on under any circumstances. I do not care how strong the pediatrician tells you you have to sign it. If they demand that you sign it and they won't release you, you need to take your child and you need to go somewhere else. But you do not, under any circumstances, need to sign this. I promise you, it will go nowhere. I've seen it, and Dad's seen it multiple times. He always told me years ago, he said, never sign anything that you do not want coming back up in court again. And this is exactly what I'm talking about. So please, guys, use your brain on this. This is not a joke anymore. This is the first step. totalitarian vaccine police state. This is where it starts, right here. This is how it's going to start with the UN. This is how they're going to start demanding that your child basically be given vaccines, or they're going to be taking custody from you. So I wanted to address that today and give you guys a really big heads up, if you encounter this form, to do everything you can to avoid it at all means possible.
You know, my mom and my dad both taught me when I was young, you never sign anything that you don't want to sign. They can't make you sign anything. They can't make you sign a confession or a release form. I know when Alexis went to camp last year out in Montana, she's been there for almost a year now, they were coming in with the flu vaccine because I sent her there in September, and they sent me this waiver form. That wasn't as bad as that one, but it said stuff that I didn't believe and I wasn't going to sign. And I just threw it in the garbage. And I just called up her house mother and I said, here's the deal. I don't want her getting shots. No shots. Thank you. She goes, okay, I'll take care of it. That was it. Nothing in writing. Nothing in writing. You can't give them this kind of evidence against you, especially with the Department of Family Services, how horrible it is now. I remember years ago, Austin, you know, when Alma, my mother, was put into the nursing home by my sister, and my mom was completely lucid. She had fallen and broken a toe from an osteoporotic fracture. I told you guys the story before. And what happened is they brought her to the nursing home, and then the nursing home called me the next day, and they said, we have some paperwork that we want you to sign. Now, remember, my sister had power of attorney, and so she had full access to my mother's estate. In other words, she had all of my mom's assets in her name because she'd already shifted it, but she wanted me to go in and sign the papers for the admission into the nursing home, even though my mother was completely lucid. She wasn't senile at all. And I went into the nursing home and I said, look, I don't feel comfortable doing this because I don't want to be responsible for this bill because my sister controls my mom's estate and she's more than capable of paying this. And I don't want to be held accountable or responsible for this in the event that my sister decides not to pay it. You guys are going to come after me. And the administrator, I'll never forget this, Austin, and I remember you had a big blow up with her too. She walks up, she says, oh, no, we would never ask you to be financially liable. Your mother's basically lucid, and there's absolutely no reason. We're just going to make sure that you're next of kin and that we can notify you in case something happens. But no. You're not responsible for this at all. You know, your mom's responsible for it. I said, okay. So I went into her office, and she literally had a stack of papers an inch thick because I felt like I was buying a house or a car or something. And there was literally 20 or 30 or 40 things I had to sign. And the very first thing on top said that in the event that Medicare or Medicaid or my sister or anybody else, any responsible party, didn't pay this bill, that I would be personally liable for it. And that's like $5,000, $4,000. That's what it said. And I remember I looked at her and I said, I told you I wasn't going to sign this. And I'll never forget what she said to me. She goes, oh, no, that doesn't mean what it says. Just go ahead and sign that. That's just to go ahead and get her admitted. But that doesn't mean anything what it says. And I looked at her and I said, you must be a blithering idiot. And she looked at me and goes, what do you mean I'm a blithering idiot? I said, well, you're saying you're a blithering idiot. I said, I'm telling you, you're a blithering idiot. I said, you just told me to sign this and that you would never use it in a court of law because it didn't mean what it said. If I had signed this piece of paper and you guys take me to court, and a judge sees that I signed this, the first thing he's going to say to me is, Dr. Brower, did you sign this piece of paper stating that you were responsible for your mother's bills? Well, yes, but she told me it didn't mean anything. He'd say, okay, Mr. Brower, here's the deal. Obviously, you don't understand what you did. You are responsible for this. And so I looked at the lady, and I started laughing. I took the whole stack of paper, and I slid it back to her, and I said, if you want somebody to sign all of this stuff admitting her in the hospital, have her sign it. I'm done. I'm out of the loop. I got up and walked out. So Austin's absolutely right. You never, ever sign something you don't feel comfortable signing. Never do it. We have a friend of ours. His name was Kurt. I'm not going to mention his last name. And he got divorced a few years ago, a young guy. And his wife put in the paperwork that he had harassed and threatened her in the paperwork that he signed. And he signed it. Immediately, she issued a restraining order on him from that. She had an immediate restraining order issued on him for that, and he never did anything to her because he signed that he had done it in the divorce papers. So, guys, a lot of you have learned this the hard way. You don't sign anything that you don't want to be made public in a court of law. Now, I am very pleased right now to bring on our guest today, Joseph Myers. He's a famed economist, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man. He's on with Dave Hodges. He's on with Doug Hagman. He's on our show on a regular basis. One of the smartest men that I know when it comes to the stock market, when it comes to gold trades, when it comes to the Brexit vote and what's going to happen to the world economies. And he's going to spend the next 25 minutes with us to the top of the hour telling us what he thinks is going on with the world economies. He also has a newsletter that you can sign up for. It is not free. You'll have to pay for it, but it's available through his website. So, Joseph, it's so good to have you back on with us, and thank you so much for speaking to my audience once again.
Good afternoon, Dr. Ted. Thank you for having me as your guest. Always a pleasure to visit with you and your listening audience. Thank you, Dr. Ted.
Joe, what is going on with Brexit? Are they really going to let England out, or are the powers to be going to go ahead and force a revote? Parliament's going to stop it. The Queen's going to stop it. Are the Germans going to stop it? Are they going to let them out, or are they going to find someone with some type of shenanigans to make them stay in the EU?
Well, they're going to try to keep them in the EU, but I think, quite frankly, the people have spoken, and as you know, no state has ever left the EU before, and this has to go down, in my humble opinion, as the greatest disaster in the 59-year history of the EU, which was formed in 1957. I think the question is, what other member nations decide to leave, and it's not a question of if, it's a question of who, and more importantly, a question of when. So I think this is the beginning of a bigger problem in the European community. I think it has a long way to go. And quite frankly, I think at some point it's going to adversely, if it hasn't already, affect the economy here in the U.S. as well.
How's it going to do that, Joe?
I think it'll do it?
No. How will it do it? How will it affect the economy in the United States, since England's not one of our biggest trading partners?
Well, I think it's going to affect all the treaties and all the trade deals that we currently have. I think a lot of these trade pacts are going to have to be renegotiated. I think what Britain has decided to do is change the playing field and not change it in a very favorable manner. I think the biggest risk moving forward is, quite frankly, what the Chinese do and how they react to certainly the uncertainty now in the global markets, Dr. Ted.
Do you think that Britain did the right thing by getting out of the EU?
I think they did the right thing. I think they should have done it a couple of years ago. The global economy's been deteriorating over a long period of time. And I think the British people basically wanted to take back control of four things. Number one, their country. Number two, their money. Number three, their borders. And number four, lastly, and very importantly, their own immigration policies. That's what I think it was all about.
Now, explain to me the money, because they kept the British pound. So how can they take back the control of their money, as far as, is it the money they were having to pay to the EU?
Yes.
Okay. Because I know that was in the billions of dollars a year, and also under their immigration,
absolutely,
they've got close to 1 million people a year pouring into England for jobs and for free stuff. So do you think this is part of the globalism, as far as the guys trying to basically destroy the population of England? The problem is, England woke up soon enough and was able to stop the vote and get out?
Well, I think they were able to stop it. I think, quite frankly, the British people understood the long-term ramifications of where the EU was headed, and it didn't want to be part of it. I think this breakup, and again, we're in the very early stages of this, and the question is, you know, what member nation state follows? I think it eventually could lead to a breakup of NATO itself. I really do.
Oh, so you think a breakup will go all the way down to NATO? I mean, you're talking fracturing all the way down the line.
Oh, sure.
Wow. Now, it did make our stock market drop pretty hard, but it's recovered some since then. Gold spiked way up, but dropped back off some. Silver's still rising up a little bit. What's that going to do for the precious metals in our stock market, and should we be out of equities by now, Joe?
Well, you know, I fell for some time, and I've written about this, as you know, in various issues of the newsletter, that I felt we were making a generational, very important top in the U.S. stock market. And I thought from that top, when it was finally in, and it looks like we've had a secondary top put in place since I first wrote about what I thought was ahead in these markets, I did think that the Brexit vote would go against the EU. I said that basically in the June issue of my newsletter, and I felt very strongly, for many reasons, the equity markets were long overdue for a correction and or a kickoff of a very violent and very severe bear market. I also said in the letter that I thought we would trade, you know, through the months leading up to the election, capped at around 18,000 to the upside in the Dow, and bordered on the downside right around 17,000. And as you know, on this recent decline, I think we got within about 150 points of the 17,000 lows. But I do think we're getting a reflex rally. I think it's a very temporary advance. And quite frankly, we've already retraced about 50% of the decline. And I think pretty much on balance, that's about what you can expect when you get a reflex rally from a deeply oversold condition. So what I'm saying, Dr. Ted, I think the upside's very limited. I think the downside is very great. I think people should be moving out of the equity markets on any further strength that we see in the averages, and I think they should be moving into the precious metals, both gold and silver.
Physical possession of the gold and silver, Joseph, or do you like to buy?
Oh, absolutely. You've got to have control of your physical. There's very little physical, as you know, in the marketplace for sale, and quite honestly, I think with the way events are unfolding around the world globally, you just cannot trust anyone to hold your physical. You just really can't.
So you have to have it yourself. Wow. Okay.
You've got to hold it yourself. You've got to put it away where it's safe. And I think if you can continue to add to it at these prices, I don't think we'll ever see these values again in a lifetime. I really don't.
So you think it's just keep. Now, real quick, though, the fuel of the equity markets. Now, I know that I feel as though it's the big bank. It's the Federal Reserve. It's the central banks in all these different countries. It's the quantitative easing. It's using the money. In giving it to the other banks, which is what the Fed admitted to doing when they asked about the over $17 trillion when they did a partial audit. They said it went to the other banks. Is that how they've done the rally? They've bought up the equities markets because they were able to gamble with, because we lost the ability because we no longer have the one thing in place. What's it called, Austin? Oh, it slipped my mind real quick. The thing that was taken away by Clinton in the banking sector, not allowing them to use people's funds in the stock market. Oh, come on, you guys. You know what I'm talking about. It's simple. You guys are going to say, of course,
what,
I know.
Glass-Steagall, was it?
Glass-Steagall, yes. You think
was it okay?
Thank you, Austin. Because the banks have come in now, and they've been able to gamble with people's money. Now they own the bulk of the Fortune 500 corporations with their interlocking corporate directorships. Who's been funding this? Has it been primarily the Fed of the United States, or has it also been the Bank of England? Who's been doing this, Joseph, and how have they kept all of this stuff in off-book balance sheets? I mean, how have they done this and kept this secret from so many people?
Well, I think there's been a tremendous increase in offshore accounts, and I think the central banks of the world in concert have attempted to lift the equity markets and bring them to unsustainable valuations. I think when we speak of the U.S. stock market, as you know, we've had the largest buyback of stock by companies in the history of the New York Stock Exchange.
Sorry.
You know, I've called this economic recovery an illusion and a farce from day one. I started writing the newsletter in 2009, and I became very suspicious of the rally when it continued to go up for no underlying economic reasons that certainly didn't make any sense to me. You know, this market has literally tripled in 7 years, and I've said many times, this bull market will go down in history as the second longest bull market in the history of certainly the stock exchanges, the longest being, as I'm sure you know, the bull market of the 1920s, which started in 1921, lasted to 1929, about 8 years. This bull market here is now 7 years old. And again, I think the upside is limited, and I think the downside is great. And quite frankly, I think this market has the potential to be cut in half before we put a long-term decent bottom in place once again.
Well, you know, it's true with the rally of the 20s because the Fed made the money really, really loose. They started printing money hand over fist, started giving it to their member banks and other banks, and the Federal Reserve was pretty much responsible for what happened with the stock market rally from 1921 to 29. And then in 29, they contracted the M1 money supply. They called in the loans. Money dried up. And everybody's equity slid to nothing in the market, and people were jumping out of windows. And basically, we had a huge 15-year depression in the United States that we only came out of after we got into World War II. I mean, it was a massive mess. Even Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the socialist, communist, whatever you want to call him, with his wife, who was the Satanist, basically, even his New Deal program was just socialism on steroids, is all it was. And
yes,
it could not lift us out of the depression. So what are we to do? I mean, who are you going to vote for? I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask you. I mean, that's one of the things I always like to ask you. Who are you going to vote for? I only see the lesser of two bad candidates being Trump, the better of the two. I don't like everything Trump has done, but I like a lot of what he's done. I don't like anything Hillary's done. And as far as I'm concerned, this is a two-dog race right now. The globalists have made sure of that. And we're probably going to have massive election fraud anyhow. But what have you decided to vote for, Joseph?
Well, at this point, I haven't made up my mind, and I probably won't until we get into the election cycle in early November. But, you know, when you talk about...
Are you talking about Hillary and Donald, or are you thinking about voting third party?
Well, you know, I may vote for third party. Again, I think it's kind of early because I'd like to see the candidates speak very specifically as to what their policies are going to be and how they're going to turn this trouble economy around. That's what I'm very concerned with, Dr. Ted.
Do you think we can trust Hillary at all because of the never-ending lies that have spewed out of her mouth and all the horrible trade deals she's already put the country into?
Well, I don't know if we can trust any politician at this point.
That's the truth.
You know, we've been lied to so much. I question the trustworthiness of any of them.
Yeah, that's true. Austin, you got any questions for Joseph?
No, this is interesting.
Okay. So what do you think? So who's going to be the next domino to fall with the Brexit, Joseph? You think it's going to be Spain, Portugal, Italy, Greece? Who's that? Who's, I don't know why in the world Greece is even in the Brexit anymore. I mean, even in the EU anymore. They owe so much money. I don't know why they just don't get out and be done with it. What do you think?
Well, I think Sweden's making the loudest noise right now. I think the Swedish people are equally as fed up, certainly, as the Brits. You know, again, going back and comparing markets, as you know, I'm a historian on markets, and what people don't realize, after the crash in 1929, the Dow peaked at 381. It didn't get back above the level of 381 till 1954, 25 years later. I think, and again, it's one man's opinion, that when the final top is recorded in this equity market, if we've not already seen it, we may be looking at a period very similarly to what we witnessed after the crash in 1929. It may be decades before we ever see these levels again in the equity market. Again, it's one man's opinion, but I think it's a distinct possibility.
So, but people need to take their profits if they have any and go ahead and pay their capital gains if they need to and step away from what they're in, go into metals right now and avoid a huge downturn in the market, especially with what's going on over with the Brexit now, what's going on with the war chatters of World War III going on and the literally the 100 million people that we have that are unemployed in the United States. Like you said, the recovery in our country has been a complete and total joke. It hasn't happened.
You know, when you look at the asset classes around the world, gold is the only asset class that's not beholden to a central bank. You know, people lose sight of the fact 1 ounce of gold has bought the Dow twice in history, 1929 and 1980. But when you go back, you study the crash in 1929, as you know, the market topped at 381. It declined to around 200. It had a very sharp counter-trend rally, which lasted about 5 months. It rallied back to 290. And then by 1933, the Dow fell from 290 to the bottom of 41. So what I'm saying is bear markets can be drawn out over long periods of time. And historically, a rule of thumb, bear markets last one-third to one-half as long as the previous bull market. So if this bull market somehow lasts around 8 years and we enter a bear market, we could be looking at 3.5-4 years of falling equity prices and or a very serious economic contraction. That's what I think is ahead of us realistically.
Okay, you said something I want you to repeat because I heard
sure.
part of it. And you said that something about the Dow being worth twice what the price of gold is. Tell me how you're tying the gold back into the price of the Dow right now.
Well, 1 ounce of gold has equaled the price of the Dow Jones Industrial Average twice in history. The first time was in 1932 under President Roosevelt, and the second time was 1980 under President Reagan. So is it unrealistic in the rule of threes that 1 ounce of gold could certainly buy the Dow again? I think it's a very good possibility. The question is at what price would gold and certainly the Dow Jones Industrial Average cross paths? I think at an absolute minimum, we're looking at 10,000 as being a very realistic number. 10,000 Dow, 10,000 an ounce gold. That's the way I see it.
Wow, that's pretty strong. Now, let me ask you another question, Joseph.
Sure.
This equity market that we're in right now, is there any positive parts of that market, or should you just be out of all of that market?
Well, I think it's an asset play market at this point moving forward. I think to be in the metals and the energy sector is certainly going to make sense as this whole thing unwinds. And I think the risk of not being in the metals is certainly greater than, you know, not being part of these markets. Yes, we've seen the lows in oil. Yes, we've seen the lows in gold and silver. These markets are not going to move in a straight line. But I do think the commodity bull is alive and well. Most supercycle commodity bulls, as you know, Dr. Ted, they last around 20 years. This one started in 2001, so we've got several more years to run in this move in commodities. And I did some research on what we can expect moving forward. Did you know that 80% of a move in any market takes place in the last 20% of the move when it gets underway? So what
well,
I'm saying
is... 20-80 rule.
Right, 80-20 rule. So
that's right.
If anybody thinks the big gains are over and done and this commodity bull in the precious metals and energy is over, they couldn't be more mistaken. 80% of the gain in the overall market will take place in the last 20%. So if this is a 20-year commodity bull in the last 20%, we're looking for 80% of the gains to take place over the next 4 years. That's what people need to know.
So there could be a huge run-up in gold in the next four
Tremendous
years.
Tremendous run-up.
Now, how do we know this? If we know that right now that, you know, commodities have gone down some. We know that, you know, the price of copper, et cetera, from when they were in the peak back in 2006, 2007. So we've had a drop in the commodity prices. Now, how do we know that gold being a commodity is not going to continue to fall with other commodities? Is it because the banks are going to start printing larger and larger amounts of money, causing hyperinflation like with the Weimar Republic, and then the gold is going to go up and maintain its value? Or is the gold actually going to increase its value from what it is right now? Because, you know, because it's been a really good stable inflation hedge, you know, since it was first used, you know, thousands of years ago. But I mean, how do we know it's going to be that good?
Storage of wealth since the beginning of time, nothing will change that fact. But again, when you look at the economic recovery, and let's just go back there for a minute, this economic recovery since 2009 has to go down in history as the weakest economic recovery since the ending of the Civil War in 1865.
Awful, that's right.
When you take a look at GDP and you take a look at consumer spending and you take a look at the quality of the jobs that have been created during this recovery, it's been a full-blown disaster. Central banks of the world have pumped untold trillions of dollars into the economy globally, and they have failed to lift the standard of living for anyone on this planet. Central banks now are attempting to build their gold reserves as quickly as they can because they know the days of these paper assets are very limited, and they know a debacle's on the horizon. Again, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Everybody trying to get out of this worthless paper all at the same time, trying to buy physical gold and silver that's no longer available for sale. That's where we're going.
Well, now, you know, Alan Greenspan is barking again, saying that everybody needs to, but we need to be back to a gold standard again, and this fiat currency nonsense has to stop. This is Greenspan, you know, Mr. Quantitative Easing himself in the 80s. I mean, now he's saying, wait a minute, we've gone too far. There's nothing positive about any of this. It's all bad.
Isn't.
And so that's what he said. Now, Joseph, give me your information so people can contact you. I want to be able to give that out twice for you. We're running out of time. What is
well,
your, what
we
are your, what's
write
your phone
about
number?
Is, you know, yeah. The things that truly matter. We tell you why they matter, and we tell you what you can and should be doing about them. In the June issue of the newsletter, I outline the reasons why I don't think you should be in equities. I give you the reasons why you should own gold and silver and oil and natural gas, and 1 year subscription to the letter is normally $259.95, but out of respect to you, Dr. Ted, and what you do, we're going to offer the 1 year subscription at the 6 month subscription price, $149.95. Going to save $110 over the full subscription price, and we're also going to include as a bonus not only the most recent issue of the newsletter, which was the June 2016 issue. I'm going to give your listening audience, if they become a subscriber, the March 2016 issue of the newsletter as well. Just go to the straightmoneyanalysis.com website, click on newsletter, click on the 6 month subscription button, enter under merchant instructions Dr. Ted Brower, and we'll make the 6 month subscription a full 1 year subscription to straightmoneyanalysis.com.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Now, guys, I want you to know something. I bring Joe on because he's brilliant, and I love having his viewpoint, though I wish he had told me who he's voting for. but I'm telling you, the guy knows his stuff when it comes to economies and economics. And, you know, and I highly suggest you. I'm not getting any money, any kickback, anything from Joe. Nothing. I'm bringing him on as a guest because you guys need to hear this. So I'm not making any money on the promotion of his material. And, you know, so I want you to know that I legitimately like him. I like his opinion. And he's brilliant. And Doug Hagman thinks the same thing, and so does Dave Hodges. So you guys support this man if you possibly can and get his newsletter and learn some stuff. I was getting a newsletter from Weiss, and I basically, it was Larry Edelson, and I basically got nothing from it. I learned nothing from it. It was a joke, okay? And so I canceled all of that. But Joseph is giving you hard, concrete information right now, and he's already talking about the different trends. So if you can afford to get his newsletter, please do so. Joseph, I want to thank you so much for being on with me today. And please, let's do it again next quarter. And let's hopefully we'll have some better news about the Brexit, and hopefully these guys will be out. But real quick, I know I've got to close the show for just a minute. But real quick, how long will it take England to extricate itself from this mess? They have the pound still, so they don't have to worry about the currency. But with the immigration and everything else, this is not going to be a quick exit. It's going to take several years, isn't it?
Well, you know, the EU is asking them to leave immediately, which I think is totally ludicrous. You know, that's a very unrealistic possibility. But I think Britain will want to leave as quickly as certainly they're able to and move away from the nonsense of what this EU has been all about. It's been, quite frankly, a dismal failure. That's the only way to characterize it.
Well, if they told me if I was Britain to get out as quickly as I can, I wouldn't let the door hit me in my backside. I'd be gone. I'd shut it down, tell the people they're not coming over getting free stuff anymore. I'd throw all the EU people out that aren't British citizens and be done with it and say, hey, you guys need to go. But, Joseph, thank you so much. God bless you. Thanks again for being on with me today. As always, it's a pleasure having you on. And Austin and I are going to finish the show now. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure, Dr. Ted. Thank you.
Thanks. Guys, also, you know, thank you. And Joseph's a good man, so I highly recommend you get his newsletter from him. But guys, also listen to me. Go to healthmasters.com. If you like the show today, if you like our shows every day, which I know many of you do, because we have so many hundreds of emails, please, thank you for supporting us. I mean, even if you get your multiple vitamin from us, just a multiple vitamin, just $25, $26 bottle of multiple vitamins, you know, it'll make all the difference in the world. You say, well, Ted, how can I make any difference with one bottle of vitamins? It's $20. And I'm like, well, it's not. One person buys a bottle of vitamins, will make a bit of difference. But if 1,000 of you guys start buying vitamins every month like that, it'll make a huge difference as far as covering the cost of the show. Isn't that right, Austin?
Yeah, and if anybody can hear this besides me, I apologize if it's on my end or Dad's end. There's this super loud buzzing on the background. I don't know if it's me. I'm about to have to check out. Just give me a headache. I don't know what we're talking
about. Okay, Austin, let me go ahead and close. You got a bad connection. So, guys, I tell you what, we love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for your prayers for Austin. Thank you for supporting Health Masters. Thank you for all of your super nice, kind emails. Thank you for just praying for us all the time for our protection. We appreciate you so much. We really, really do. We'll be back tomorrow with a brand new show. God bless you, and just thanks for listening. Bye-bye.